Chapter 34 Legends. All right, Nat said, unrolling one of Roydell's best maps on his table. Telmanus, Tom, Noel, Julin, and Mandevwin had arranged their chairs around the table. Beside the map of the area, Matt unrolled a sketch of the layout of a medium-sized town. It had taken some doing to find a merchant willing to sketch them a map of Trustair, but after Hinderstap, Matt didn't like to go into a town without knowing what they were up against. Matt's pavilion was shaded by the pine forest outside, and the day was cool. Occasionally, the wind would blow, and a small sprinkle of dead pine needles would shake free from the boughs above and fall to the ground, some scratching the top of the tent as they fell. Outside, soldiers called to one another, and pots clanged as the midday meal was distributed. Matt studied the town map. It was time to stop being a fool. The whole world had decided to turn against him. Even rural mountain towns were death traps these days. Next he knew, the daisies on the sides of the road would begin ganging up to try and eat him. That thought gave him pause as he remembered the poor peddler sinking into the phantom Shiatan town. When that ghostly place had vanished, it had left behind a meadow with butterflies and flowers, including daisies. Burn me, he thought. Well, Matram Cawthon wasn't about to end up dead on some random backwater road. This time he would plan, and he would be ready. He nodded to himself in satisfaction. The inn is here, Matt said, pointing at the town map. The Shaken Fist. Two separate travelers agreed that it was a fine inn, the nicest of the three in the town. The woman looking for me hasn't made any effort to hide her whereabouts, so that means she thinks that she is well protected. We can expect guards. Matt pulled out another of Roydell's maps, one that better showed the geography around Trustair. The town sat in a small hollow, surrounded by gently rolling hills, beside a small lake fed by Highland Springs. The lake reportedly produced some fine trout, the salting of which was the town's main trade. I want three squads of light cavalry here, Matt said, pointing at an upper slope. They'll be hidden by the trees, but we'll have full view of the skies. If a red night flower goes up, they're to come in directly along the main road here for a rescue. We'll have 100 crossbowmen sequestered on either side of the town as a backup to the cavalry. If the night flower is green instead, the cavalry is to march in and secure the main roads to the town here, here, and here. Matt looked up, pointing at Tom. Tom, you'll take Harnan, Fergin, and Mandevwin as apprentices, and Noel can be your footman.
Footman?
Noel asked. He was a gnarled man, missing teeth, with a hooked beak of a nose. But he was tough as an old battle-scored sword passed down from father to son.
Why does a gleeman need a footman?
All right, Matt said. You can be his brother, then, who doubles as a manservant. Julin, you...
Wait, Matt,
Mandevwin said, scratching his face near his eye patch.
I'm to be an apprentice gleeman? I'm not certain my voice is suited to fine singing. You've heard me, I warrant. And with only one eye, I doubt I'll fare well at juggling.
You're a new apprentice, Matt said. Tom knows you don't have any talent, but he took pity on you because your great aunt, with whom you've lived since your parents died in a tragic oxen stampede, took sick of the clover pox and went crazy. She started feeding you table scraps and treated you like the family hound, Marks, who'd run away when you were just 7. Mandevwin scratched his head. His hair was streaked with gray.
Aren't I a little old to be an apprentice, though?
Nonsense, Matt said. You're young at heart. And since you never married, the only woman you ever loved ran away with the tanner's son, Tom's arrival offered you an opportunity to start fresh.
But I don't want to leave my great aunt, Mandevwin protested. She's cared for me since I was a child. It's not honest of a man to abandon an elderly woman just because she gets a little confused.
There is no great aunt, Matt said with exasperation. This is just a legend, a story to go with your false name.
Can't I have a story that makes me more honorable? Mandevwin asked.
Too late, Matt said, rifling through a stack on his desk, searching out a cluster of 5 pages covered in scrawled handwriting. You can't change now. I spent half the night working on your story. It's the best out of the lot. Here, memorize this. He handed it over to Mandevin, then got out another stack of papers and began looking through them.
"Are you sure you're not taking this a little too far, lad?"
Tom asked.
"I'm not going to be surprised again, Tom," Matt said. "Burn me, but I'm not going to let it happen. I'm tired of walking into traps unprepared. I plan to take command of my own destiny, stop running from problem to problem. It's time to be in charge."
"And you do that with," Julian said.
"Elaborate aliases with backstories," Matt said, handing Tom and Noel their sheets.
"Bloody right I do."
"What about me?"
Telmanis asked. That twinkle to his eyes was back, though he spoke with a completely earnest voice.
"Let me guess, Matt. I'm a traveling merchant once trained with the Aiel and who has come to the village because he's heard there's a trout that lives in the lake who insulted his father."
"Nonsense," Matt said, handing him his sheets. "You're a warder."
"That's rather suspicious," Telmanis noted.
"You're supposed to be suspicious," Matt said. "It's always easier to beat a man in cards when he thinks about something else. Well, you'll be our something else. A warder passing through town on mysterious business won't be so grand an event that it will draw too much attention, but to those who know what to look for, it will be a good distraction. You can use Fenn's cloak. He said he'd let me borrow it. He still feels guilty for letting those serving women get away."
"Of course you didn't tell him that they simply vanished," Tom added, "and that there was no way for him to keep it from happening."
"Didn't see the point of telling him," Matt said. "No use dwelling on the past, I say."
"A warder, is it?"
Telmanis said, flipping through his stack of papers.
"I'll have to practice scowling."
Matt regarded him with a flat expression.
"You're not taking this seriously."
"What did you ask? Is there someone who is taking this seriously?"
Burn that twinkle. Had Matt really ever thought this man was slow to laugh? He just did it on the inside. That was the most infuriating way.
"Like Telmanis," Matt said. "A woman in that town is looking for Perrin and me. She knows what we look like so well that she can produce a drawing more accurate than my own mother could have made. That gives me a chill like the Dark One himself standing over my shoulder. And I can't go into the flaming place myself, since every bloody man, woman, and child has a picture with my face on it and a promise of gold for information. Now, maybe I went a little far with the preparations, but I intend to find this person before they can order a flock of dark friends, or worse, to cut my throat in the night. Understood?"
Matt looked each of the five men in the eyes, nodded, and started toward the tent flap, but paused beside Telmanis' chair. Matt cleared his throat, then half-mumbled, "You secretly harbor a love of painting, and you wish you could escape this life of death you've committed yourself to. You came through Trustair on your way south rather than taking a more direct route because you love the mountains. You're hoping to hear word of your younger brother, whom you haven't seen in years, and who disappeared on a hunting trip in southern Andor. You have a very tortured past. Read page 4. Matt hurried on, pushing his way out into the shaded noon, though he did catch a glimpse of Telmanis rolling his eyes.
"Burn the man. There was good drama in those pages."
Through the pine trees, he could see that the sky was cloudy. Again. When was that going to end? Matt shook his head as he walked through camp, nodding to the groups of soldiers who offered him salutes or calls of greeting to Lord Matt. The band were staying here for the day, camped on a secluded wooded hillside, a half-day march from the town, while they made final preparations for the assault. The three needle pines here were tall and their limbs spread wide, the shade keeping underbrush to a minimum. Tents clustered in groups around the pines, and the air was cool and shaded, smelling of sap and loam. He went about the camp, checking into the workings of his men and seeing that everything was being handled efficiently. Those old memories, the ones that the eel fin had given him, had begun to blend so evenly with his own that he could barely tell which instincts came from them and which were his own. It was good to be among the band again. He hadn't realized how much he'd missed them. It would be nice to reunite with the rest of the men, the troops led by Estion and Darad. Hopefully they'd had an easier time of it than Matt's force had. The cavalry banners came first in his rounds. They were separate from the rest of the camp. Horsemen always considered themselves superior to foot. Today, as all too often, the men were worried about feed for their horses. To a good cavalryman, his horse always came first. Their trip from Hinderstap had been hard on the animals, particularly since there wasn't much to graze on. Little was growing this spring, and the winter's leavings were strangely sparse. Horses would refuse patches of thatch, almost as if it had gone bad like other food stores. They didn't have much grain. They had hoped to live off the land, as they were moving too quickly for grain wagons. Well, they'd just have to find something to do about that. Matt assured the cavalryman he was working on the problem, and they took him at his word. Lord Matt hadn't let them down yet. Of course, the ones he had let down were rotting in their graves. He denied a request to fly the banner, perhaps after the raid on Trustair. He didn't have any true foot with him at the moment. They were all with Estion and Darrad. Telmanis had wisely understood that they'd need mobility and had brought the 3 banners of horse and nearly 4,000 mounted crossbowmen. Matt checked on the crossbowmen next, pausing to watch a couple of squads drilling in firing ranks at the back of the camp. Matt stopped beside a tall pine, its low branches a good 2 feet above his head, leaning against the trunk. The line of crossbowmen weren't practicing their aim so much as their coordination. You didn't really aim in most battles, which was why the crossbows worked so well. They required a tenth the training of a longbow. Sure, the latter could fire faster and farther, but if you didn't have a lifetime to spare practicing, then these crossbows were a fine substitute. Besides, the crossbow reloading process made it easier to train the ranks to fire together. The squad's captain stood on the far side, slapping a rod against the side of a tree once every 2 seconds to give a beat. Each crack of the wood was an order. Raise crossbows to the shoulder on the first, fire on the second, lower on the third, crank on the fourth, up to the shoulder again on the fifth. The men were getting good. Firing in coordinated waves made for more consistent killing. Each fourth crack let loose a wave of bolts into the trees. We'll need more of those, Matt thought, noticing how many of the bolts splintered during the training shots. You wasted more ammunition practicing than you did fighting, but each bolt now could be worth 2 or 3 in combat. The men were getting good indeed. If he'd had a few banners worth of these when he'd fought at Bloodwash Falls, perhaps Nashif would have learned his lesson a lot sooner. Of course, they'd be more useful if they could fire faster. The cranking was the slow point. Not the turn of the crank itself, but the necessity of lowering the crossbow each time. It cost 4 seconds just to move the weapon about. These new cranks and boxes that Telmanis had learned to make from that mechanic in Murindi sped things up greatly. But the mechanic had been on his way to sell the cranks in Camelin, and who knew who else had bought them along the way. Before too long, everyone might have them. An advantage was negated if both you and your enemies had it. Those boxes had given a lot to Matt's success in Altara against the Seanchan. He was loath to surrender the advantage. Could he find a way to make the bows fire even faster? Thoughtful, he checked on a few more things in the camp. The Altarans they'd recruited into the band were settling in well, and other than feed for the horses and perhaps crossbow bolts, supplies looked good. Satisfied, he went looking for Aludra. She had established herself near the back of the camp alongside a little cleft in the rocky hillside. Though this spot was much smaller than the glade of trees the Aes Sedai and their attendants used, it was noticeably more secluded. Matt had to weave around 3 separate cloth sheets hanging between trees, placed carefully to block any view into Aludra's workspace, before he reached her. And he had to stop when Bael Doman held out a hand, holding Matt back until Aludra gave leave for him to enter. The slender, dark-haired illuminator sat on a stump in the center of her little camp, powders, rolls of paper, a writing board for notes and tools neatly arranged on strips of cloth on the ground around her. She no longer wore her braids, and her long hair fell loose around her shoulders. That made her look odd to Matt. Still pretty, though. "Burn it, Matt, you're married now," he told himself. Aludra was pretty, though. Eginen was there, holding a nightflower shell upright for Aludra to work on. Aludra's full-lipped face frowned in concentration as she tapped lightly on the shell. Eginen's dark hair was growing out, making her look less and less like one of the Seanchan nobility. Matt still had trouble trying to decide what to call the woman. She wanted to be known as Lyalwyn, and sometimes he thought of her like that. It was foolish to go about changing your name just because someone said you had to, but he didn't really blame her for not wanting to rile Tuon. She was a bloody stubborn one, Tuon was. He found himself glancing to the south again, but caught himself. Blood and ashes, she'd be just fine. Anyway, Tuan was gone now. So why did Aginan continue the charade of calling herself Lyalwyn? Matt had actually called her by her old name once or twice after Tuan's departure, but had received a curt reprimand. Women. They made no sense, and Seanchan women least of all. Matt glanced at Bale Doman. The muscular bearded Ilyanar leaned against a tree near the entrance to Eludra's camp, two flapping white sheets of cloth extending in either direction near him. He still held out a warning hand, as if this entire camp weren't Matt's in the first place. Matt didn't push his way past, though. He couldn't afford to offend Eludra. She was flaming close to being done with those dragon designs of hers, and he meant to have those. But light if it didn't smart to have to pass a checkpoint in his own camp. Eludra looked up from her work, tucking a stray lock of hair behind her ear. She noted Matt, then looked back to her nightflower and began tapping with the hammer again. Bloody ashes. Seeing that reminded him why he visited Eludra so infrequently. The checkpoint was bad enough, but did the woman have to pound on something explosive with a hammer? Had she no sense at all? The entire lot of illuminators was that way, though. Short a few foals of a full herd, as Matt's father might say. "He may enter," Eludra said. "Thank you, Master Doman."
"It do be a pleasure, Mistress Eludra," Bale said, lowering his hand and nodding amiably to Matt.
Matt straightened his coat and walked forward, intent on asking about crossbows. Something immediately caught his eye, however. Spread out on the ground behind Eludra were a series of neat pages with detailed drawings, along with a list of notations with numbers beside them.
"Are these the plans for the dragons?" Matt asked eagerly.
He knelt down on one knee to inspect the sheets, without touching them. Eludra could be particular about that kind of thing.
"Yes."
She was still tapping with her hammer. She eyed him, looking just faintly uncomfortable. Because of Tuan, he suspected.
"And these figures?"
Matt tried to ignore the awkwardness.
"Supply requirements," she said.
She put down her hammer and inspected the cylindrical nightflower from all sides. She nodded to Lyalwyn.
Bloody ashes, but the figures were large. A mountain of charcoal, sulfur, and... bat guano?
The notes claim there was a city specializing in producing it over in the northern reaches of the Mountains of Mist.
What city specialized in gathering bat guano, of all things?
There were requirements for copper and tin as well, though for some reason there were no numbers beside those. Just a little star notation. Matt shook his head. How would the common people react if they knew that the majestic night flowers were just a paper, powder, and, of all things, bat dung? No wonder illuminators were so secretive with their craft. It wasn't just about preventing competition. The more you knew about the process, the less wondrous and more ordinary it became.
"This is a lot of material," Matt said.
"A miracle? That is what you asked me for, Matrim Cawthon," she replied, handing her nightflower to Lyalwyn and picking up her writing board. She made some notations on the sheets strapped to the front.
"That miracle I have broken down into a list of ingredients. A feat which is in itself miraculous, yes? Do not complain of the heat when someone offers you the sun in the palm of her hands."
"Doesn't seem so manageable to me," Matt muttered, mostly to himself. "Is this figure the costs?"
"I am not a scribe," Eludra said. "Those are estimates only. The calculations, I have taken them as far as I can go, but the rest will have to be figured by those more proficient. The dragon reborn, he can afford such costs."
Lyalwyn watched Matt with a curious expression. Things had changed with her, too, because of Tuan. But not in the way he'd expected. Mention of Rand brought the colors swirling into Matt's vision, and he suppressed a sigh as he shook them away. Maybe Rand could manage costs like these, but Matt certainly couldn't. Why, he'd have to dice with the Queen of Andor herself to find this kind of coin. But that was Rand's problem. Burn him, he'd better appreciate what Matt was going through for him. "This doesn't include a manpower estimate," Matt noticed, scanning the sheets again. "How many Bellfounders are you going to need for this project?" "Everyone you can get," Aludra said curtly. "Is that not what you promised me? Every Bellfounder from Andor to Tyr?" "I suppose," Matt said. He hadn't actually expected her to take him literally on that. "What about copper and tin? You don't have an estimate of those." "I need all of it."
"All of? What do you mean, all of it?"
"All of it," she repeated, as simply and calmly as if she were asking for more cloudberry jam for her porridge. "Every scrap of copper and tin you can scrounge up this side of the spine of the world." She paused. "Perhaps that does seem too ambitious."
"Bloody right it's ambitious," Matt muttered.
"Yes," Aludra said. "Let us assume the dragon has control of Camelon, Kyrian, Ilion, and Tyr. If he were to provide me with access to each and every mine and metal store of copper and tin in those four cities, I suppose it would be sufficient."
"Every metal store," Matt said flatly.
"Yes."
"In four of the world's largest cities."
"Yes."
"And you suppose that would be sufficient?"
"I believe that is what I said, Matt from Cawthon."
"Great. I'll see what I can do about that. Would you like the bloody Dark One to come polish your shoes while you're at it? Maybe we could dig up Ardor Hawkwing and get him to do a dance for you."
Lylwyn gave Matt a glare at the mention of Ardor Hawkwing. After a moment, Aludra finished her annotations, then turned to regard Matt. She spoke flatly, just vaguely hostile.
"My dragons, they will be a great power for a man of war. You claim what I have given you is extravagant. It is only needed."
She eyed him.
"I will not lie and say I didn't expect this dismissiveness from you, Master Cawthon. Pessimism. She is a fond friend of yours, yes?"
"That's uncalled for," Matt grumbled, glancing back down at the drawings. "I barely know her. Mere acquaintances at best. You've got my oath on it."
That earned a snort from Bale. Whether it was one of amusement or derision was impossible to tell without looking back to Judge's face. Matt didn't glance at him. Aludra was staring at him. Their eyes met for a moment, and Matt realized he'd probably been too curt with her. Maybe he was uncomfortable around her. A little. They'd been getting close before Tuon. And was that pain hidden in Aludra's eyes?
"I'm sorry, Aludra," he said. "I shouldn't have talked like that."
She shrugged. He took a deep breath.
"Look, I know that... Well, it's odd how Tuon..."
She waved a hand, cutting him off.
"It is nothing. I have my dragons. You have brought me the chance to create them. Other matters are no longer of concern. I wish you happiness."
"Well," he said. He rubbed his chin, then sighed. "Best to just let it pass. Anyway, I hope I can get this done. You ask for a lot of resources."
"These Bellfounders and materials," she said, "they are what I need. No more and no less. I have done what I can here without resources. I will still need to spend weeks testing. We will need to make a single dragon first to check. So you have some time to gather all of this. But it will take much time, and yet you refuse to tell me when the dragons will be needed."
"Can't tell you things I don't know myself, Aludra," Matt said, glancing northward.
He felt a strange tugging, as if someone had hooked a fisherman's line about his insides and was softly but insistently pulling on it.
"Ran, is that you, burn you?"
Colors swirled.
"Soon, Aludra," he found himself saying. "Time is short. So short."
She hesitated, as if sensing something in his voice.
"Well," she said, "if that be the case, then my requests are not so extravagant, yes? If the world goes to war, the forges will soon be needed for arrowheads and horseshoes. Better to put them to work now on my dragons. Let me assure you, each one we finish will be worth 1,000 swords in battle."
Matt sighed, stood up, and tipped his hat to her.
"All right, then," he said. "Fair enough. Assuming Rand doesn't bloody burn me to a crisp the moment I suggest this, I'll see what I can do."
You would be wise to show Mistress Aludra respect, Lao Wen said, eyeing Matt, speaking with that slow Shonshan drawl, rather than being so flippant with her.
That was sincere, Matt said. That last part was, at least. Burn me, woman. Can't you tell when a man's being sincere?
She eyed him, as if trying to decide if that very pronouncement were some kind of mockery. Matt rolled his eyes. Women.
Mistress Aludra is brilliant, Lao Wen said sternly. You don't understand the gift she is giving you in these plans. Why, if the Empire had these weapons...
Well, see that you don't give them to it, Lao Wen, Matt said. I don't want to wake up one morning and find that you've run off with these plans in an attempt at retrieving your title. She looked insulted that he'd suggest such a thing, though it seemed like the logical thing to do. Shonshan had an odd sense of honor. Tuan hadn't tried once to flee from him, though she'd had ample opportunity. Of course, Tuan had suspected from near the beginning that she'd marry him. She'd had that demoni's foretelling. Burn him, he wouldn't look southward again. He wouldn't.
My ship is being driven by different winds now, Master Cawthon, Lao Wen said simply, turning from him and glancing at Bale.
But you wouldn't help us fight the Shonshan, Matt protested. It seems that you'd...
You do be swimming in deep water right now, lad, Bale interjected in a soft voice. Aye, deep water, filled with lionfish. It may be time to stop splashing so loudly.
Matt closed his mouth.
All right then, he said.
Shouldn't the two of them be treating him with more respect? Wasn't he some kind of high Shonshan prince or something? He should have known that wouldn't help him with Lao Wen or the bearded sailor. Anyway, he had been sincere. Aludra's words made sense, crazy though they sounded at first. They would need to dedicate a lot of foundries to the work. The weeks it was going to take him to reach Camelin seemed even more galling now. Those weeks spent on the road should be spent building dragons. A wise man learned that there was no use fretting over long marches, but Matt felt far from wise lately.
All right, he said again. He looked back at Aludra. Though, for completely different reasons, I'd like to take these plans with me and keep them safe.
Completely different reasons? Lao Wen asked in a flat tone, as if searching for another insult.
Yes, Matt said. Those reasons being that I don't want them here when Aludra taps one of those nightflowers the wrong way and blows herself halfway to Tarwin's Gap.
Aludra chuckled at that, though Lao Wen looked offended again. It was hard not to offend a Shonshan. Them and the bloody Aiel. Strange how opposite they could be in many ways, yet the same in so many others.
You may take the plans, Matt, Aludra said, so long as you keep them in that trunk with your gold. That is one object in this camp that will receive the greatest attention from you.
Thank you kindly, he said, stooping to gather up the pages, ignoring the veiled insult. Hadn't they just made up?
Bloody woman.
By the way, I nearly forgot. Do you know anything about crossbows, Aludra?
Crossbows? She asked.
Yes, Matt said, stacking the papers. I figure there should be a way to make them load faster. You know, like those new cranks, only maybe with some kind of spring or something. Maybe a crank you could twist without having to lower the weapon first.
This is hardly my area of expertise, Matt, Aludra said.
I know, but you're smart about things like this, and maybe...
You will have to find someone else, Aludra said, turning to pick up another half-finished nightflower. I am far too busy.
Matt reached up under his hat, scratching his head.
That...
Matt!
A voice called.
Matt, you've got to come with me!
Matt turned as Ulver ran into Aludra's camp. Bale held out a warning hand, but of course Ulver just ran right beneath it. Matt straightened up.
What? He asked.
Someone's come to camp!
Ulver said, excitement painting his features. And those features were a sight. Ears that were too big for his head, nose that was squashed down, mouth that was too wide. On a child his age, the ugliness was endearing. He'd have no such luck when he grew older. Maybe the men in camp were right to be teaching him weapons. With a face like that, he'd better know how to defend himself. Wait, slow down, Matt said, tucking Aludra's plans into his belt. Someone's come? Who? Why do you need me?
Tomana said to fetch you, Oliver said. He thinks she's someone important. Said to tell you she's got some pages with your picture on them, and that she's got a distinctive face. Whatever that means.
That... Oliver continued, but Matt had stopped listening. He nodded to Aludra and the others, then trotted out of her camp, past the sheets, and out into the woods proper. Oliver tagged along behind as Matt hurried to the front of the camp. There, sitting on a short-legged white mare, was a pudgy woman with a grandmotherly air, a brown dress and streaks of gray in her hair, which was pulled back in a bun. She was surrounded by a group of soldiers, Talmanis and Mandevin standing directly in front of her, like two stone pillars barring entrance to a harbor. The woman had an Aes Sedai face, and an aging warder stood beside her horse. Though he had graying hair, the stocky man exuded that sense of danger that all warders had. He studied the band's soldiers with unyielding eyes, arms folded. The Aes Sedai smiled at Matt as he trotted up.
Ah, very nice, she said primly. You've grown prompt since we last parted, Matram Cawthon.
Varen, Matt said, panting slightly from the run. He glanced at Talmanis, who held up a sheet of paper, one of those imprinted with Matt's face. You've discovered that someone's been distributing pictures of me in Truster? She laughed.
You could say that.
He looked at her, meeting those dark brown Aes Sedai eyes. Blood and bloody ashes, he muttered. It was you, wasn't it? You're the one who's been looking for me.
For some time, I might add, Varen said lightly. And rather against my will.
Matt closed his eyes. So much for his intricate plan for the raid, burn it. And was a good plan, too. How'd you find I was here? He asked, opening his eyes.
A kind merchant came to me in Truster an hour ago and explained that he'd just had a nice meeting with you, and that you'd paid him handsomely for a sketch of Truster. I figured that I'd spare the poor town an assault by your, associates, and just come to you myself.
An hour ago, Matt said, frowning. But Truster is still half a day's march away.
Indeed it is, Varen smiled.
Burn me, he said. You've got traveling, don't you? Her smile deepened.
I surmise that you're trying to get to Andor with this army, Master Cawthon?
That depends, Matt said. Can you take us there?
In a very short time, Varen said. I could have your men in Camelin by evening.
Light. 20 days shaved off his march? Maybe he could get Aludra's dragons into production soon. He hesitated, eyeing Varen, forcing himself to contain his excitement. There was always a cost when Aes Sedai were involved. What do you want? He asked.
Frankly, she replied, sighing slightly. What I want, Matram Cawthon, is to be cut free from your Tavirin web. Do you know how long you've forced me to wait in these mountains?
Forced?
Yes, she said. Come, we have much to discuss.
She flicked her reins, moving her horse into camp, and Talmanis and Mandevin reluctantly stepped aside, letting her in. Matt joined the two of them, watching as she made straight for the cook fires.
I guess there won't be a raid, Talmanis said.
He didn't sound sad. Mandevin fingered his eye patch.
Does this mean I can go back to my poor aged aunt?
You have no poor aged aunt, Matt growled.
Come on, let's hear what the woman has to say.
Fine, Mandevin said. But next time I get to be the warder, all right, Matt?
Matt just sighed, hurrying after Varen.